312-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We hear so much about social workers. They work for governmental agencies, schools, private industry. They work with children. They work with adults. But if you don't know one or if you don't work with one, you may not have a full grasp of what they do. Well, March is Social Work Month, and the theme set by the National Association of Social Workers is Social Work Breaks Barriers. Well, tonight we're talking about the expansive work social workers do, as well as some of the struggles that come with the job. My guest is Dr. Indira Henard, Executive Director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center, a career social worker. And if you have a comment or if you have a question about social work, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can also tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Dr. Henard, welcome back to the program.
Hi, Harold. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for being a part of the program. Let's get right into the discussion. As I said, we hear so much about social workers in the news, but can you give me a working definition of what social work is?
Sure, absolutely. I absolutely love social work. Social work is really a helping profession. And the primary purpose of the social work profession is to really focus on the human well-being and to really meet the basic as well as the complex needs of all people. But there's also a specific focus around those who are vulnerable, oppressed, and also living in poverty.
You are a doctor. You're not a physician, but you have a doctorate. It's in social work, correct?
Correct.
So how does that work? We often hear about social workers maybe as having, undergraduate degrees and even master's degrees, but we often don't hear, although I'm sure there are a lot of them around, that have doctorates in social work. Talk to me about that level of education in your profession.
Yeah, so folks have their doctorate in social work, but they also have a PhD in social work, which is called the terminal degree. And normally when you're getting a PhD in social work, you're focused on research, you're focused on teaching. Those who have doctorates in social work are really focused more on a high level of practicing on the macro level. So it could be management of agencies. It could be more kind of theoretical work as well. It just really depends. But there's really not a profession that we have that is as versatile as social work.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me specifically about the kind of work that social workers do. For example, obviously you are the executive director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center, but not everyone who needs the professional work of social workers are victims of sexual assault. It is quite expansive. Kind of run down for me what other fields they work in.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are a lot of clinical social workers, and clinical social workers, they work in a variety of school settings. So school social workers for our youth and children. There are military social workers, and they primarily focus on working with our military folks who are coming back from their tour. There are social workers who, work in various forms of federal government, right? And they may not necessarily have a direct practice, so to speak, but it may be on a more macro level, like in terms of policy analysis. Or, in terms of working on Capitol Hill. So, I mean, it really varies. There are hospital social workers, right? And they focus, and there's multiple levels of hospital social workers, from oncology social workers to, children's social workers. So, I mean, it really is, Harold, on the spectrum.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about social workers and social work. March is Social Work Month. If you have a comment, if you have a question about social workers and the work that they do, give us a call. Again, lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. So, Dr. Hernard, a lot of times we hear about social workers making home visits. Under what circumstance would a social worker make a home visit? Is that kind of thing still done? Obviously, during the height of the pandemic, it was very rare for someone from the outside, no matter what their job happened to be, coming into a home. But even pre-pandemic and now, why would a social worker come to a home?
Yeah, so it could be for a variety of reasons. If you are, for example, doing in-home hospice care for a loved one, there are social workers who are part of that hospice team who will come to your home to visit you and your loved one. There are social workers who may do in-home visits for children and families, depending on the agency, and that can be for a variety of reasons. It could be to check on primarily the welfare of the child and the overall needs of the family.
In the case of checking on the welfare of a child, what would you look for?
Well, I mean, it just really depends. Each case is very individualized and it's different. But in a nutshell, you're making sure that a safe home, that all of the child's needs are being met, and that there's no neglect happening and that there's no harm happening to the child.
But how can you know that short of any glaring example? I would imagine, for example, we often see in popular culture, in movies and in dramas, that if a family wants to be a foster family or if they want to adopt a child, they're always rushing around trying to make sure that all the T's are crossed, all the I's are dotted, that the refrigerator is clean, that the bathrooms are clean, that everybody is spick and span. So how would you, in this example, know that you're walking into a household that may not be safe for a child?
Yeah, well, I mean, what I can say to that is that social workers are very trained and very skilled at what they do. And so what I mean by that is that they know what to look for. They know what to look for in terms of signs that if something may be off. And so, again, it's hard to kind of pinpoint exactly, but what I can say is that there is a extensive process that goes into getting prepared to walk into somebody's home. What I will also say is that social workers do not work in silos and that this really is a coordinated kind of community response. So there are also other kind of partner agencies who are also involved.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is Social Work Month, and we are talking to Dr. Indira Hernard. She is the executive director of the DC Rape Crisis Center, a career social worker. And we're talking about all of the different aspects of social work and social workers. If you have a comment or a question, certainly reach out to us and give us a call. At the DC Rape Crisis Center, for example, what do the social workers do there? And how is that work different from therapy, from the perspective of a novice? I would imagine the line between therapy and social work sometimes in crisis situations, the line is very thin.
Well, so I think it's important to kind of do some level setting. So most therapeutic work that happens, it happens by a licensed clinician because that is standard best professional practices. So we have amazing social workers at the D.C. Rape Crisis Center. Over 90% of our clinicians are trained social workers, and their primary job is to work with survivors of sexual violence. And so they do therapy, and we see children as young as 11 years old. And so our therapists help them to unpack and process their trauma in a healthy way. We also have our clinical director, and her role is more of a micro and macro. She oversees multiple departments. And as I like to say, she keeps the trains running on time.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about social work. Let's talk to Ruby calling from Baltimore. Ruby, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just want to make a comment. I am a doctorate in social work as well.
Hey.
With research background, and social work is one of the most diverse degrees that a person can get. You have to decide what population you want to work with or what population you don't want to work with, and there are opportunities in the social work field for people to work in that. Whether you're working in prisons, hospitals, schools, churches, federal government, community agencies, there are opportunities for social workers because the skills are so transferable to those various skills.
Okay, Ruby, thank you so much for sharing with us. I appreciate your phone call. And to that point, you know, Dr. Hennard, we have seen over the past 4 or 5 years a movement by city governments and town governments, you know, big and small, to hire social workers to work with police departments, because we've seen a rise in police getting calls to address mental health issues. What are your thoughts about that? Good thing, bad thing, and from your professional perspective, how might that work?
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Harold, we've definitely seen an increase in departments across the country who are really partnering with mental health professions when they go out in the field to deal with a mental health crisis. And we think that that is and can be a wonderful idea when you are partnering with multiple agencies, and what, you know, social workers can do on the scene, again, as the woman said beforehand, our skills are transferable. And so some of the things that could happen on the ground is that the social workers could help to de-escalate a situation. And that is by, you know, really finding out what's happening with the person, can really partner with the police officers and really doing a response where at the end of that crisis that no harm has come to the person in crisis. And that really is the ultimate goal. Part of what we have seen historically is that when there have been mental health crises involving the police, it did not go well for whatever reason. And so this new way in terms of really bringing social workers and mental health professionals on the ground is really a way in which to help alleviate and not create that again in terms of not having the outcome that we would want. So it can be a very, very good thing. And I think it really gets the response that all parties want.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking about social work and social workers. Mike calling from Baltimore. Thanks for calling, Mike. What's on your mind?
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. First thing, I would like to, announce that April the 5th through the 8th is the National Convention for the Association of Black Social Workers. It will be held in Chicago this year, as well as there's also the upcoming, it will be coming up soon. I think they may have already had it, convention for the National Association of Social Workers. So that's important to put that out there. And the things that I'd like to point out quickly is that with all that being said, I think it's also important to say that social work, the safety of social workers as they carry out their job duties, is very, you know, their safety a lot of times is very much at stake. They oftentimes work in hostile work environments. They're undervalued. They're underappreciated, similar to teachers. And without them, you know, I think the society would be in chaos. I myself have been a social worker for over 25 years. I've worked in a variety of settings, environments. I've done child protective services, adult protective services, psychiatric social work, medical social work. And there needs to be more advocacy. I would like to see our organizations, one of the things I would like to see them to do at these conventions is to advocate better pay for social workers and to talk about how to protect social workers as they're out in the field, et cetera, doing their job, making a difference, and have to oftentimes deal, like I said, underpaid and working in hostile work environments.
Wow.
Thank you.
Yes, Mike, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts about that. Dr. Hinard, Mike said quite a bit, and I want you to take a moment to think about, you know, all of the things that he said about the pay, about, you know, safety issues and the like, because I'm going to take a break. And when you come back, I'd like to hear your thoughts about that. Also, I want to hear from Marie calling from Lorton, Virginia. Marie, you are on hold right now. Please do not hang up. We will be picking up your call in just a bit. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As I said, if you're on the phone, stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3. HD2. We're talking about social work and social workers. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on Sirius XM Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. March is Social Work Month, and the theme is Social Work Breaks Barriers. Tonight, we're talking about the work social workers do. My guest is Dr. Indira Hinard, Executive Director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center. If you have a comment or question about social work, social workers, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Dr. Hinard, we were hearing from Mike, and he was talking about the pay. But before we even talk about that, I want to talk about the safety issue that he brought up. I mentioned about the growth in municipalities wanting to hire social workers to work with police in the event that you get a 911 call and someone is going through a mental health crisis. But that is a relatively new thing. I suspect that Mike was talking about safety and security issues for social workers long before this police partnership was a concern or a consideration.
Hello?
Yeah. Can you hear me? Yeah. Go right ahead, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that was a really, really great point in that, you know, safety has always been paramount for social workers, and so part on the space, whether social workers are going into someone's home, whether they're going into the community, or even, you know, going out with law enforcement, there are policies and procedures in place to make sure everyone stays safe. What I will also say is that there are specialized policies within that organization for which the social worker works as well to make sure that their staff are being safe. But it is a job that where you put yourself at risk at times, depending on your role.
Why would you put yourself at risk? What role might that be more of a risk as opposed to less?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, when social workers are out in the community, You know, there is a risk with that, particularly if they're with law enforcement. But again, you know, there are policies and procedures, but there's a risk. There's a risk, you know, when social workers have been in the hospitals these past 2 to 3 years, specifically around the COVID pandemic, right? But the thing about the social work profession and those who do social work, you know, it is all about being in service. And being in service to some of our most vulnerable residents. And so, as I like to say, it takes a special heart to do the work that we do.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brenda, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. What's on my mind is, how do a social worker really know when a child is at home, when they go to visit or call the parent on, you know, socialize with the parent? How do they know the kids are being protected? Because I've been in a situation where I have known that they weren't.
Let me make sure I understand the question, Brenda. You're saying, how might a social worker know that a child is at home?
No, a child that's being taken care of, right, at home.
Oh, so how do you know that the environment that the child is in at home is a safe environment?
Right. Is it? How do they know whether or not those kids are safe?
Okay. Dr. Hinard, do you want to take a crack at that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, each individual situation is different. Each individual home is different. And so there isn't a one-size-fits. There's not a one-size-fit-all model, so to speak, but, you know, there are certain specific things that social workers look for to try to ensure that a child is safe. It's not just standing in someone's home as well, but it's also having conversations with the child, having, if possible, if the child can talk, having conversations with, you know, other folks who are a part of that situation. So you can't really kind of say.
Hello?
Yeah, Dr. Hinard?
Hello?
Dr. Hinard, can you hear me? I think we may have lost her. Let's take a break, and we will reconnect with Dr. Hinard, and we will continue the conversation. Brenda, thank you so much for your question. Also, Maria calling from Lorton, Virginia. You're next. We're going to get Dr. Hinard back on the line, and we will continue this conversation about social workers. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We have reconnected with Dr. Hinard, a doctor of social work and the executive director of the D.C. Rape Crisis Center. Before we lost you, Dr. Hinard, you were answering a question from a caller who was asking, how does a social worker know that a child is in a safe environment at home? I would imagine sometimes it's a trained eye that's hard to quantify.
Correct. That's it exactly.
You can expand on that if you wish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, social workers go through extensive training just in general. And again, when a social worker is walking into someone's home, it's not just about looking around the home to see if it seems safe. There's a multitude of factors that go into it, from interviewing relative people to, if possible, talking to the child or the children at hand. You know, there's specific paperwork that is also aligned with that visit as well. So it's a very trained eye. It can't be quantified, but there's multiple levels in order to make sure that all is well and that safety is being adhered to.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Maria calling from Lorton, Virginia. Thanks for hanging on, Maria. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead.
Okay, good evening. Happy social work, doctor. I'm a master level social worker. I've been a social worker for many years. This year's theme it really resonates with me, breaking barriers, because that's what social workers do. We break barriers in so many settings, and you've talked about the hospital, social services, criminal justice. I also want people to think about social workers as being first responders, because oftentimes we are the first responders in situations where no one else has responded, where we do assessments, and then we connect and communicate with other professionals to ensure the safety and well-being of individuals. And then finally, what I'd like to share is that social work is a profession. It is not a title. And because it is profession, we are professionals. The doctors talk about training, and that's not just education, but that's also ongoing training. And I work in Adult Protective Services, and I just want to share with you that when we respond to a report for Adult Protective Services, oftentimes it's with law enforcement, but we may receive an allegation that there's abuse or neglect in the home. And so we go out with that allegation, and we know it's an allegation. Sometimes we may go out, and unfortunately, what's reported is not true. But there are times when we go out and we find a situation that is much more severe. But it's not about a one-time going out. It's about doing an assessment. It's about ongoing, and it's about establishing relationships and also connections. Social workers are experts as far as community services. So thank you for the opportunity to speak. Happy Social Work Month. Stay safe. Thank you.
Maria, thank you so much. Dr. Hennard, your thoughts about what Maria just shared?
Yeah, she was absolutely right on. I think there's a lot of myths and facts around social work in general, and she's right on. This is definitely a profession. It's one of the largest growing professions to date. And part of that reason is because mental health is one of the number one public health crises in the country right now. But it's extensive training. Most social workers who are clinicians, they have to go through an extensive renewal process for their license. There is regulations that we all have to abide by. So, you know, it is a pretty, as I like to call it, it's a heavy-duty profession, and the regulations are there for a reason.
You know, I must, you know, in full disclosure, the very first social worker that I ever met was my neighbor who lived just across the street from me when I was growing up in Lanham. His name was George Austin. He is long deceased, but he was a professor of social work at Bowie State College. That's how far back we're talking about. One of my closest, frat brothers was the chair of the social work department at my alma mater at Morgan State. Howard University has, a nationally known school of social work. And just talking about, you know, just the local HBCUs, UMES and Coppin State. You know, there are schools of social work and programs, particularly at HBCUs, that have been around for a really, really long time. From how important is it that these schools, particularly at HBCUs, be culturally relevant for the population that they serve?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the power of social work schools at HBCUs cannot go understated. I think, you know, they're even more so important because historically and even currently, the social work profession is historically white. And Black and brown folks are underrepresented in the social work schools. In the social work profession. And so our HBCU social work schools, they definitely play a strong hand in diversifying the profession in a really intentional way.
But this is also, correct me if I'm wrong, a career field that is predominantly female. You don't have as many men in it. I mean, I would imagine women outnumber the men in the profession some 3-1. Is that correct?
That's definitely safe to say that there's a larger number of women in the profession than men, but, you know, men are coming up slowly but surely, and I think pretty soon they will definitely be neck and neck with us. There's a lot more men getting involved in the social work profession, particularly Black men, as a result of what's happening in the current environment. And so there's a lot of affinity groups within the social work profession, such as Black Men in Social Work and LGBTQI plus social workers, et cetera, et cetera. But yes, women do lead the pack.
I'd be remiss if I did not mention the latest national tragedy in Nashville, Tennessee, the mass shooting at the Christian school there. I would bet my paycheck that before the week is out, we will hear in the headlines that counselors and social workers will be at that school to deal with what will probably be a mental health crisis as a result of this horrific event. And we often hear that when there is, you know, a school shooting or a shooting at some kind of enclosed institution. When social workers are tasked with going in to provide support, to calm the fears in a situation like this, what do they do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, it looks different on the ground, but in a nutshell, Harold, they are bearing witness and they're holding space for the unimaginable. When a mass shooting happens or something else major happens, like you mentioned, on school grounds, grief counselors and social workers and other mental health professions are asked to come out. And it is, you know, giving folks a space to process, to perhaps ask questions. It's, you know, letting them be able to feel whatever they need to feel in a safe space and a therapeutic space. But it's also not just supporting the students, it's also supporting the faculty and the staff and the administration, because when something like this happens, it impacts everyone. It also impacts the helpers, right? And so I think it cannot be understated the level of secondary vicarious trauma that social workers are experiencing on the ground. They are, as I say, they're on the battlefield literally every day, 24/7. And something like what just happened in Nashville, you know, they most likely will be going into that space, bearing witness and holding and receiving, you know, all of those emotions and receiving all of that trauma. And so that's why it's so important that the helpers are also taking care of themselves. And that they, you know, are practicing wellness and self-care, et cetera, et cetera.
Which leads me to my next issue. We have been hearing for decades about social worker burnout. Mm-hmm. How would you define that, and what causes that?
Yeah, I mean, social worker burnout is caused by a multitude of things, but the number one reason is that, you know, high levels of secondary vicarious trauma. These last 3 to 4 years operating in the COVID pandemic, or as I call it, the COVID trauma, the racial trauma, the political trauma, the death trauma, it has taken its toll. What we've seen as we are coming back into this pre and post pandemic, particularly for our social workers who are on the ground in schools, students are coming with a lot. And so we're seeing a high turnover rate in the profession because there's so much trauma and emotion that social workers are having to deal with. And so again, for those who are employing social workers, you know, my charge to you is, how are you taking care of your team? How are you making sure that folks are not burning out, the folks who are literally on the front lines receiving this. This is why we're seeing a high turnover, because social workers have been working nonstop for the last 3 years.
Yeah, I want to drill down a little bit about that, because I remember many years ago in talking to the, you know, state social workers who work for the, you know, the state of Maryland, and some of the struggles that they had were very, very similar to the struggles that psychologists and psychiatrists have, where you are dealing with, I mean, you're still in the helping field, you're in the helping profession, and you may have a stack of files. So you may have one person who is drug addicted. You may have another person who is dealing with alcoholism. You may have another person who is having issues surrounding, you know, domestic violence, sex addiction, people who are on the lowest end of the socioeconomic spectrum, who are trying to claw their way out of that. And I can just imagine just those five or six things that I just mentioned, and you've got a stack of that at the end of a day. You know, how do you keep your own head and heart clear? Because, you know, they say garbage in, garbage out. And and sometimes I can only imagine, you know, the kind of stresses that social workers and people in that field are under. How do you, I mean, take yourself. I mean, you're working at the Rape Crisis Center. You're dealing with survivors of one of the most horrific crimes ever.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, for me, for example, like you mentioned, I've been doing this work for over 20-something years, and I deal with sexual trauma 24/7, 7 days a week. And so for me, what's important, and even what's important for my team, is that we are able to release as much as possible, that we're able to really put things in place internally at our agency, but also in our personal lives, that allows us to regulate and really be able to continue to pour from an intentional space, right? And so I think when we see burnout, you know, we see burnout for a multitude of reasons, but, you know, we have to figure out what our self-care and wellness looks like daily, because each day it may look differently depending on what happens. And so it's very individualized. And so I think the social work profession in general is getting more intentional about really putting things in place and encouraging employers to put things in place that are really supporting social workers who are on the ground. And it's also becoming a big part of training in social work schools, right? What resources are you putting in place in order to take care of yourself? How are you going to be able to pour back in as much as you pour out? And so that's something that each individual social worker has to figure out. But, you know, it can be done, but it can be challenging at times. And right now, in this current environment, it is really challenging for social workers to be mindful of their own health and wellness as a result of just the levels, the high levels that the work is requiring.
Let me go to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, Rakita. Calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Rakita. What's on your mind?
Hi, yes. I am a licensed clinical social worker, and I agree with everything that has been shared. And I just wanted to touch base on what we just talked about, which was the burnout. I didn't necessarily think that it was something that I would go through, but when COVID hit, and I'm a child therapist, so when COVID hit, I had to do all of my virtual sessions at home, and I couldn't really meet with the children in person, and it was a little hard to do and keep them engaged, and I finally started to feel burnt out in my job. But, you know, this was the main time that my clients, especially children, needed me because they didn't understand what was going on, nor did their parents know how to explain something like this because we haven't really had anything along this line. So it was, I think what helped me the most was practicing what I preach. So I tell parents all day long to, you know, make sure you have self-care, make sure you're taking time for yourself. But I also have to remind myself to have self-care for me and to create healthy boundaries so that when I closed my office door at home, that I was leaving work behind me and I could then continue with dinner and interacting with my family.
Go ahead, Rakita, please. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Yeah, but the one important thing that I really wanted to stress working in this field is although we're diverse and we have multiple roles because I'm in after-school programs, art programs, working with teen moms, and also in a clinic, I think my biggest thing is family involvement. There are so many parents that want change, but parents need to be willing to change as well. And also, I think we need to change things within our school system with having more mental health providers. Because just as much as we focus on physical health, we need to address mental health, or that can lead to long-term illness and other physical health problems. So that's pretty much all I wanted to share.
Let me ask you, Rakita, we are after the huge issues regarding the pandemic, and so where are you on the burnout scale? Have you quote unquote moved beyond that? Have you just kept those things in place that you know work, that you were kind of discovering worked for you during the pandemic to make sure that your head was clear?
Yeah, so great. Thank you for asking. I'm pretty much over it. And a lot of that had to do with looking at the strengths. So I'm able to be more flexible within my position where we're meeting with kids where they are in their setting. So they're comfortable at home talking about things versus being in our office. And also it was helpful when I just had to take time to just make sure I was applying those skills that I needed to do for myself, and then incorporate that into my office, because now we're going into 2023, of course, and the kids are now coming back into the office. Mm-hmm. So what used to be difficult with providing those virtual sessions, now they come to me. Or because we've been doing this, I had to do it for almost a year and a half, because I've been doing it so long, I came up with some skills or techniques that were helpful, that it's not as much as a burnout for me. So it was more of exposure over time, which made things a little more easier for myself.
Rakita, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us, and I hope that you continue to do the great work that you've been doing. I appreciate your phone call. Dr. Hinnard, is there a kind of person that makes a really good social worker? What personality traits are there?
Yeah, well, there are definitely certain traits that we look for. You know, first and foremost, someone who is compassionate, someone who is able to meet clients where they are, someone who is in the business of being in service and being a servant leader, someone who has a specialty and a heart for working with those that are most vulnerable. And then, you know, what I would also say is, you know, this is not talked about a lot, but social work is not just about helping clients and other individuals, but it's also about being able to do your own work and self-reflection as well. So, you know, another trait is being able to kind of look in and do your own self-reflection as relates to the work and the impact that the work is having on you.
Is there a personality trait that would not make a good social worker?
I think those who are not used to working with diverse populations, and those who are not used to working with those who are most marginalized in society.
Yeah. Dr. Indira Hennard, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. I appreciate
you so much,
your time,
Harris.
And happy Social Work Month.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, March 27th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.